Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted podcast host. I'm here with Ray. Why don't you give yourself a nice introduction, focusing on why we should trust you in this interview?
Sure. Yeah. So as you said, my name is Ray Hyde Cornell. I run Cornell Content Marketing, which is a full service content marketing agency where we marry psychology with content marketing, demand generation, and helping companies get more market share without increasing their ad spend dollars. So to answer your question, very good question, why should people trust me? Why should they listen to me? I spent 8 years studying psychology and criminology and working in the behavioral health sciences. And we now use a lot of the psychological principles that I used with patients who are going through serious behavior change modification, like corrections counseling and substance abuse counseling. And now we use those same behavior change models to get our clients' marketing strategies to change buyer behavior.
I like that. I'd done an interview with a realtor, and she said that she used it wasn't the 8 or 9. It was another personality test model, but she would structure her content to deal with people who had like an A type personality or like a B type personality, like addressing and thinking of people who are coming to your site based off of their internal intrinsic values, are going to be seeking different comfort or different messages or different information from their content, from that content process. You know, like when I was buying this house with my wife, my questions about the property, about the house, about the process were so radically different from what she was concerned with, what she wanted to check off of her list, because she had a very, uptight father and upbringing. So like hers was very much about like, oh, when was the last inspection done? What was the detail on the foundation? And my concerns were like, hey, what's it like in spring here? Like, is there hiking nearby? Like, what's it going to be like? Are there a lot of noisy dogs we're going to have to deal with? Like two completely different lists of concerns, but I could see how that as a content strategy piece could inform things really in interesting ways. So how do you approach that in your own business? Is there a specific model that you approach? Is it a general process? Walk us through some of those steps.
Yeah, so we have what we call the ELITE method, and the ELITE each stands for a different phase of our process. And I won't go into all the details unless you really want me to, but buried within each of those steps are these different psychological models. So for example, when we are in the implement stage, the I, we're using the cognitive behavioral therapy triangle, CBT triangle, to really make sure that our content is providing the internal experience, you know, to your point about having different concerns about when you're buying a house, we have to focus on that internal experience even more than the outward experience we want to affect. So the CBT triangle says that our thoughts affect our emotions, which affect our behaviors, which affect our thoughts, which affect our emotions, which affect our behaviors. Mm-hmm. It kind of looks like this recycling triangle, and it just goes around and around and around. But most marketers just focus on, I want to get them to buy. I want to get them to opt in. I want to get them to click. They focus on the behavior. Sometimes they focus on the thought or the emotion that might drive that behavior. But too often marketers get sucked into this kind of trendy fad or this high pressure situation where they're being told by leaders, hey, you've got to get results, get results, get results. So they switch to these manipulative marketing tactics to get people to feel FOMO or scarcity or, you know, anything like that that's going to elicit the behavior they want. And yet that's neglecting this huge internal experience that's going on for your ideal buyer. So as you can tell, I can go on and on and on about this, but that's just one of the psychological models that we use within our process.
I'm just going to have you go ahead and say, what does ELITE stand out? I love a good acronym. I really do. So let's walk through those. And I think that's a great framework. Let's walk through your ELITE model and pick it apart one by one.
Sure. So the first E is examine. You have to think of it like you're building a bridge between you and your ideal buyer. You have to know, where are we? Are we on flat ground? Is it rocky ground? Do we need to grade first? Do we need to level? You know, what kinds of assets are we using that have been successful? Which ones actually match the brand we want to be portraying now and into the future? I worked with a cybersecurity company over the last couple of years where they had a ton of great assets, but they were all so outdated. They really needed to be updated to match the image that they were trying to portray in order to claim more market share and beat out the competition. And because they were so outdated, when we examined everything that they already had, there was really nothing left that we could use because they had grown and matured so much as an organization and they hadn't grown or matured their marketing assets. So that first step is examine.
That makes sense. And it often is kind of a mismatch too of organizations forgetting that how they are in the real world is not necessarily how they're seen in the digital world. You know, you might have grown yourself very successfully and have these, you know, shipping relationships and partnerships. You know, I worked with the brand Save Fry Oil, and they were literally so not online that when you typed in their brand query, it was like, did you mean savefileorder.com and not show up their website at all for their brand? Yeah. And, you know, that's happening for another company, Lead Truffle. They just launched. And so, like, my thing is thinking about the sort of the looking glass effect with the internet of what's there isn't always an accurate reflection. So it is our duty as SEOs to examine how they appear online and then start chiseling, start modeling, start improving. So what's the L?
So the L is learn. You have to learn about your ideal buyer. And this is where we go really, 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 really deep. So within this stage, we're using what I refer to as the stages of change matrix. And this is based on the trans-theoretical model of psychology, which I used a lot as a substance abuse counselor, where we guide people through the stages of change for healthy behavior modification. And when we're learning about our ideal audience, it's not enough to just say, oh, they're in the brand awareness stage, or oh, they're in the interest stage, and now we can capture their contact information. You have to look at the internal experience that's going on for them to see where they are in a much more robust model than what the sales funnel provides. So we break it down into the stages of change, which gives us a nice framework to lean on to say, okay, are they even aware that they have the problem that we as a company can solve for? Okay, now that they're aware of the problem, are they actively looking for solutions? Are they still trying to in-house the solution? Are they even trying to solve the problem? Are they just dealing with it on a day-to-day basis? Do they have other priorities that are putting this problem we solve for lower on the list? All of those things are going to affect how you talk to them and the messaging that you use at those various stages of change. So we get really granular on the thought process and the internal experience that our ideal buyer is going through.
I think it's an important step in SEO because we jump right to the keywords and keyword research, right, and we forget there's humans behind those keyboards that are typing those things in. And so you have to step back and understand, you know, who is searching for this. I was just talking to my friend Michael McDougald, and we were kind of trying to understand for his business, which is SEO, like how is he going to try to reach his particular audience? Like, who is he exactly trying to reach? Who's trying to solve this problem that he can speak to? And it just kind of, like, looking at the keywords, nothing in the keywords actually gives you that much of a hint. You have to go back a layer and think through, you know, put yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Right. And that's the thing I love about SEO is it requires empathy because Google is all about intent matching. And if you can't master intent matching, then you can't get in front of people at the right time when they're willing to step closer to you. I think something like 60% of Google searches do not end in a click because of AI features and snippets and things like that nowadays. And so if you really want people to click and land on your website, you have to prioritize ranking for those higher intent keywords that indicate someone wants more than just a high-level quick answer. They want a more complex answer, or they want a tool that they can interact with, or they want exact pricing information, or any of those things that will actually get them to come onto your page.
That makes sense, because it is a challenging world where so much more of our sandwich is being eaten before we get to the table. How do you see that dynamic play out of, I know that some organizations have adopted a prone status of like, well, they're just going to, plug it into GPT. So I guess content marketing's dead. What's the point of writing anything if they're just going to make it up anyways? How do you respond to that pessimistic side of our content's devalued? So why even bother?
I mean, that's a fatalistic perspective. I mean, that's the perspective of someone who is intimidated by all of these changes and how fast the world of SEO and search intent is changing. And they're just throwing their hands up and they're saying, well, I can't wrap my brain around AI and the way Google is ranking content nowadays, so I'm just not even going to try. And that's a huge mistake, because if everyone else is taking that approach, but you actually put in the effort, then you're going to be the one that ranks. So you have to think about, okay, yes, there are a lot of people who type queries into Google and they just want those quick answers. But those aren't the people that you want anyway. If you want to actually sell your services, you want the people who, they're going to type their query into Google, they're going to see the AI snippet, they're going to click the little link icon next to, ooh, where did, Gemini get this from? And then they're going to follow to your website. You want those people. And so it's so much more important nowadays to prioritize the quality of your content. And the other thing is, Google is the SEO Bible, and Google is prioritizing human created high quality content with the EEAT model. So you have to do that as well. You can't just throw your hands up and say, oh, I'm just going to spit out, ChatGPT driven content. Google doesn't want that, because it knows that humans don't want that. So cater to what Google and the humans want, and you will rank.
That makes sense. What was the I again? I know you said it earlier, but...
Implement. Yeah, so a lot of marketing models stop at this point. They think, okay, we're just going to implement all this content. We're going to create this sales funnel where we have brand awareness content and interest content and decision content and action content. And within our model, we also have a fifth stage of the sales funnel, which is retention, because marketing should never stop at the sale. It's far cheaper to retain existing happy customers and clients than it is to go out and win new ones. So you have to continue nurturing them with your messaging beyond that actual point of conversion. But it doesn't stop there. You implement your strategy and you make sure you've filled all those gaps to make sure that there is content for every stage of change within that buyer journey. But then you go on to the T, which is transform. And this is where you really have to learn. You have to be willing to learn and take what the market is saying, take what people are engaging with, and do more of that. See what's not performing well and either kill that on your website and redo the content that you created for that keyword. The point is, it has to be a living organism. Too many companies just think, oh, we've got our website done. We've got, two or three dozen blog posts. We've got some videos. We're done. Let's go just focus on sales.
Right.
That's not enough. You have to keep learning and iterating, because the market is learning and iterating and evolving.
I think there's also a value to be had of if you are developing content in you're making updates to it incrementally, adding new opinions, adding new information over time. You're going to get twiddled. Google has an anti-spam response, so you never count yourself down or up like right away. Like, you got to think long term, but that means that you need to be invested in that transformation, invested in how they a process to come back to those. And it's not just spray and pray. Oh, well, we wrote an article last month, we'll write a new article this month. There needs to be a built-in process to come back and add to, adjust, take inputs from sales, input from customer support, and develop that content. Because you're right, there is meat on that bone beyond just the original grabbing. You know, you need to have something there of value for, you know, it's crazy how many SaaS companies, they just want to create content that reaches new audience while not really serving the people that are their consistent users. And if you've worked in SaaS, you know that recurring income is the holy grail. I mean, that's the entire reason you do SaaS, is so that you can build those recurring users. So you want to solve those little pieces of friction. You want to connect the dots of new SEO developments or new industry developments with, you know, new pieces, new features, capabilities within your tools, which means going back and seeing, when did we talk about that? Oh, we didn't. Or, oh, we did kind of, but we added this new element to it. So
yep.
It needs to be, exactly. Your site needs to breathe.
Right, exactly. And with SaaS in particular, a big reason for churn is poor user adoption. And so it's like drinking from a fire hose sometimes when you adopt these new sales tools as a business. So if you are forgetting to create content for the people you've already sold, your churn rate is going to be through the roof. So you have to make sure that when your existing users are going into Google and typing in things like, how do I do this on such and such platform? How do I do that? They're finding answers within your knowledge base that are going to help you continue to rank and support the people that you've already worked so hard to get.
So I'm guessing you're not misspelling it. So there's probably an E after the L. So let's round out our acronym.
Sure, yes. So that final E is enhance. And this is one of my favorite steps in the entire process. So once we have the marketing strategy, we've implemented it, and we're in this learning about the market stage in the transform part, we then go to enhance. This is where, so too often, B2B companies in particular, they have their teams working in silos. They have their sales team. They have their marketing team. They have their customer support team. They have their customer experience and service delivery team. In order to make sure that you're constantly learning, what are the words that our ideal customers and clients are using? What things are they struggling with? Why did they decide to choose us over our competition? And what are their main pain points? What are their complaints? What are their points of hesitancy or the barriers to buying that the sales team is encountering? If you can create these feedback loops between marketing and sales, and marketing and customer support, and marketing and service delivery, you are amplifying the amount of knowledge that you then get to put into practice, and you're getting ahead of those queries because you're tapping that wealth of information that you've already worked so hard to build up around you.
Right. So if you're running CPR classes, you want to have a connection between your marketing team and the people that are either doing those Zooms or doing those in-persons, because you know they have questions all the time. And I try to do this myself when I onboard a new customer, is find out, have they been writing down any of those questions? Have they been capturing any of those questions? You know, what's the top five things you always get asked? Because that's just a pinch hit, like, duh, that's content. Like that, exactly. That's an idea. That's an enhancement. That's something that you should add and embellish, you know, maybe as a new resource, maybe an extra paragraph or section or a new video, different formats to address that particular pain point that wasn't being engaged before.
Right. And when we're talking about SEO, the more you can get ahead of search terms and trends, the more valuable that your content becomes. So for example, with things changing so rapidly nowadays, if you're having these recurring feedback loops with your marketing and sales team, I like to set up marketing and sales once a month, and then marketing and service delivery or customer support once per quarter. And having these open conversations about what are customers talking about? What are they complaining about? What are they worried about? Beyond just buying our solution. but actually mm-hmm. in their world, in their environment, in their industry, what are the things that they're up against? Then you can start creating content before those numbers really start to trend on, you know, KW Finder is my favorite SEO keyword tool. So before you start seeing those trends emerge on KW Finder, you'll actually start hearing these tidbits of conversation so that you can get ahead of getting that content out there.
I think, yeah, there's definitely a problem with keyword research tool focused SEO. And, you know, there are some aspects of it that are a big trap. You know, we forget that there is, we just look at these numbers and say, okay, well, that's the search volume for this query. No, you can impact that. You can influence that through other channels. You know, you can build awareness and you can, you know, reach influencers who know, build search or, you know, tap into existing audience and channels and, you know, you'll get, you know, there's radio ads, TV ads, you know, that are disconnected. You know, they hear it in the ether and then they try to find out about that thing. And that generates, you know, branded and unbranded search. Well, you know, you just manipulated, you know, the search engine volumes that you see in those tools. So exactly. Don't sleep on other marketing channels just because you're so focused on, oh, well, this is the volume and this is, let's optimize for that. Let's look at what it is and see, okay, that's what it is now. Is that, you know, is there a seasonal impact on that? And then how can we influence the graph of interest for this particular thing?
Exactly. And that's why I really love implementing this model with our clients, because it's not just, okay, let's create a marketing strategy and then let's build it. It's not just that, but it's insourcing valuable information that allows you to stay ahead of those curves or even create those curves. And the companies that I work with, they want to be thought leaders. They want to be the ones changing their industry because they have a new and better way of doing things, even if that way is harder to explain or, you know, there's resistance in getting it adopted. But that has been the case with every amazing innovation that we've seen come out. So you have to be the one that's taking your future in your own hands rather than mm-hmm. being that passive, oh, let's just see what the trends say kind of marketer.
Yeah, I think there's two pieces to that. One is the basing your strategy off of what you see your competitors doing and saying, oh, well, they were really successful, I should do exactly what they do, as opposed to identifying, you know, and using that competitor research gap, not to catch up, but to look at the market gap of all of the competitors. What is the positioning and value across the board that's missing? Not just, oh, this guy wrote these five articles and I need to write similar five articles. It's looking at, okay, there are 20 articles and none of them address this particular pain point.
Yeah, or your particular perspective. So every company has a unique point of view. They have a different driving why. They have a different mechanism for solving the problem they solve. So even if your competition has written great articles, yeah, those might be great articles, but it's from their point of view. You have to write it from your point of view. And if you disagree with the competition, which I don't think I've ever worked with a company that didn't disagree with their competitors,
yeah,
write that, explain that, elaborate on that, take a stance and be that thought leader in your industry. And the people who also disagree with your competition are going to gravitate towards you because they find something that resonates with the messaging they're hearing in their own heads.
How do you handle the complex around subject matter experts, whether you insource them, outsource them, your opinion on ghostwriting as an agency versus finding somebody who you is already an existing, maybe more expensive asset externally that you can use in quote, or developing internal resources where you can take their expertise and utilize it? What's been your experience around that process?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it all comes back to integrity. There are companies out there who will say, oh, we believe XYZ and here's an article on it, but if you talk to them, nobody in their company has any authority or any experience or has done any research or has any kind of background to back up where those ideas come from. And they just outsourced those concepts, but they're claiming them as their own. What happens is that breaks down trust. If they had taken a different approach where they say, hey, you know what, we don't know about this, or there's a gap in research, so we're going to do some research. We're going to go out and we're going to interview some experts. We're going to send out some surveys. We're going to do some statistical analysis, and we're going to find the answers. We're learning right alongside you because everything in our market is changing. That is going to win so much more trust than if you try to play it off as we're actually experts. But people can feel the phoniness if that's not the truth. So if you have the in-house experts, absolutely put the spotlight on them. Oftentimes when we work with companies where they have some amazing, talented men and women within their organization, but those people maybe aren't writers or they don't have time to write, yes, we will interview them and we will either ghostwrite content and pull those ideas out of their heads and turn it into videos and blog content and email sequences and resources and tools, or we will write the content as, you know, their head of marketing while quoting that in-house expert. If they don't have that in-house expertise, then you have to use sources that do have the knowledge, whether that's something like Gartner research or Google search research or whatever reputable source of the data you can find, or conduct your own research. I think a lot of companies are afraid to say, hey, we don't know the answer to this. And so they just don't even talk about it. But it's far more admirable and far more trust building if you say, hey, we don't know the answer to this, so we're going to conduct some research of our own and figure it out. And then we'll report back to you.
It's not even just that. That's highly linkable. And, you know, that's fodder to, you know, get out there to the press, to do a press release afterwards, to also, you know, build those unique citations that are being looked at by AI, by LLM models. If you're actually generating some of that data and it's not anywhere else, then yeah, it might get, stolen a little bit into that AI overview, but it's your data and it leads back to you. So, you know, there's still, whether it's the link or whether it's the citation for it, doing additional research if possible. You know, I haven't had many situations where I've had an organization that had the budget to do much additional research, but there have been many scenarios where I'm like, we need a subject matter expert. You know, like again, Save Fry Oil. I told them, hey, we need to hire a chef to interview other chefs about controlling costs because you sell, you know, a mechanism that cuts fry oil costs. So you want to capture the expertise of two restaurateurs talking about how they've overcome some of those cost challenges inherently and let them duke it out. Like, you know, pull from that quote, you know, I think Ross Hugens or Ross Simmons is constantly saying, you know, create once and distribute forever. Video is such a great format. Podcast interviews are such a great format to have, you know, unique human content. I think human certified content at some point in the next few years is definitely going to be a tech, you know, maybe somebody listening is going to steal my idea and make a keyboard attached to a fungible token every time you click a letter and it verifies with a fingerprint and a retinal scan and a blood test at the same time to prove that a human did this. I mean, it sounds absurd, but the level of advancement in LLM models in the past year, going from, you know, kindergarten level to running at full gallop, it's human content is human created and crafted, and conversation is only getting more valuable.
Yes, I agree. And I think that's one area where, I mean, LLMs are good at creating. They're good at hallucinating new ideas and making things up, basically. But I think the more people play around with AI and the less it becomes a novelty, or the less it becomes this thing that we're constantly having to watch to see, well, what's it going to do next? And the more it becomes a day-to-day existence, just like our cell phones are phenomenal. They do so much, and yet we take them for granted. People forget them on the sidewalk all the time.
Yeah.
We have taken this technology for granted. AI is going to get to that point as well. And the more that that happens, the more important it's going to be to come back to something creative, something new, something novel. And earlier you mentioned, you know, you don't know many companies that have the budget to do their own research. I'd actually challenge you on that, because there's a lot that people can do with online tools and surveys where, as long as you're reporting your numbers. So for example, there's a tool that I often use with my clients called Pollfish. Awesome tool. You can really set parameters on who's going to be able to respond to your survey. So you're getting a very narrow sample. And I think the last one we did was, it was $1,000 to reach 1,000 people who fit very specific parameters. And from that, we were able to report data saying, hey, we asked 1,000 experts in this particular industry, and this is what the majority of them said, and this is what they said on this. And we were able to report primary source data for a relatively low cost. You're not talking about, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to do huge batches of customer interviews. You're talking about sending out an email survey that's automated and does all the data analytics for you. So I would encourage people to think outside the box and focus on, what value can I add? What questions do I have that I'd be willing to go out there and find the answers to, and then report those to the people who are following us? Because that just makes you so much more trustworthy and valuable and seen as an authority.
I agree. And I also just remembered there is Storm by Stanford University, which uses multiple agentic searches to, on your subject, create a scientific paper format on that specific item, citing carefully and within all of the parameters of exactly how it's supposed to be laid out, you know, with footnote citations and everything. So you can use that tool to kind of cheat and create some meta research on existing research that you could publish, you know, go over it, augment it with your own internal voice. But yeah, there's definitely, I don't want to say that there's, you have to have a big budget in order to do it. That's a great quick win. Polling is another quick win. Leveraging your social media audience too can also, you know, obviously not everyone has one, but there are scenarios where you can, you know, put things out there and get, you know, it's a sloppy data set sometimes, but sometimes you can capture some unique intent or voice in that information.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that idea of the meta-analysis in particular, because the funny thing is, you know, you see people selling courses and resources and things like that, and you wonder, why are they paying for this? You could go on YouTube and you could learn all of this exact same stuff there. But people pay for convenience, and they pay for somebody to filter through all the noise for them. So when you're doing a meta-analysis, that's what you're doing. You're saying, hey, I know there's a ton of research out there on this. Here's the consensus of what the majority of those findings are. Let me distill it down for you so you don't have to spend 97 hours searching through Google search answers and research studies and paring all of that down into something actionable. Here you go.
Love that. Wrapping it up, let's turn to something super actionable, something after this call that any SEOer can turn around and go do this afternoon.
Yeah, so I think one of the things, you know, a lot of what we've talked about today is the difference between human-sourced information versus tool-sourced information. And I think a lot of people, they have certain websites or podcasts or reports that they follow. You know, one that I think I get in my email inbox every day, if not twice a day, is Demand Gen Report. I get all those emails, and it can be very habit-forming to continually look outside of yourself for answers. But what I would encourage people to do is sit in your desk chair, turn off your email notifications, turn off your monitor, turn off your cell phone, and just sit there for 15 minutes and think, the people that I want to connect with, what is their day-to-day life like? When they come from the weekend into work on a Monday, What are they stressed about? What are they feeling overwhelmed by? And then how can I maybe help them with that? Even if it's not directly tied to the solution that I offer through my SaaS tool or whatever it is that your company provides, how can you help them alleviate some of those pains? And if you can practice that empathy exercise of getting into the minds, as opposed to looking outside of your own experience and your own insights for all of the data and trends and facts and figures, you're going to be ahead of the curve because you are going to be tapping into those internal experiences and providing content and messaging that resonates on a level that AI never can.
Love that so much. Thanks for all your insights. Tell us where we can find you, your company. Is there a social platform you engage with on most?
Yeah, absolutely. I hate Facebook and Instagram and all that, but I love LinkedIn. So find me on LinkedIn. My first name is spelled kind of weird. It's R-A-I, last name Cornell, like the university. I'm happy to connect with anyone on LinkedIn. And you can also find out more about me and what we do and our elite method on cornellcontentmarketing.com.
All right. I'll add it all to the show notes. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.